Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
And good morning to anybody who's new. I don't know if you've ever been to a Zendo before, but I guess the first thing that I would say, please feel free to make mistakes. It takes a little time to catch on to all this. And if you have any questions about how anything works or what anything is for, you could ask our head monk, Jeff, or you could ask me. Please try and feel at home. Today, I'd like to go back to the beginning and talk about Zazen. Now, I know many of you have heard this over and over again because you've been in this practice for a long time, but I always feel that since Zazen is the heart of everything, that it never hurts to go over it again. So I'm going to just say a few words about it. And so we'll start with the word, Zazen, Zazen. Right? And the Za part means to sit, and the Zen part means Zen, which in the end is indescribable. So we know Zen as a religion. In the loosest sense of the word, it's, I guess, more like a practice, a spiritual practice. And no matter what religion that you are, you're not excluded by Zen, because the heart of Zen is to include, it is about the realization that everything is included in our life. Nothing is left out. So the question comes up, I think, for a lot of people, even after you've been sitting for 20 years, is why do we sit? Why do I sit? And there is no one answer. There are probably 100 answers in the end. But an example, or a few examples, might be some people start sitting for peace of mind. Their life is disturbed. They live most of their days in some upset fashion. And they're looking for something to help get grounded, to help find some peace. Another is, and you see a lot of this in the world of mindfulness meditation, people take up meditation, and sometimes Zen in particular, because of anxiety or because of depression or because of fear, some overwhelming emotion that someone or some of us are seeking to lessen the overwhelmingness of it. Another thing in the world of mindfulness meditation and also in Zen, people come to the practice to reduce stress in their lives. I don't think there's probably anybody in this room that hasn't gone through a time in their life, whether it was work or family or whatever, that haven't experienced a prolonged period of stress. Other people are just seeking happiness. They want to have more joy in their life. They want to open to life. Another example would be wanting to just feel better about ourselves. Zen practice is about the experience of what self means and who we are, who we really are, behind the definition of self. And another biggie is to understand the meaning of our lives. What is the meaning of life? So all of these different things are compelling, and they're an important place to start to enter this practice. Now, Zazen, which I mentioned, most frequently in our practice we refer to as sitting. So you'll hear that meant that word, to sit or sitting. It mentioned a lot. And in Zen, the reason that we sit is to just sit. Just sit. Anything else is extra. It interferes with just sitting. So we don't sit to experience some particular outcome. We just sit. And this just sitting is one of the foundations of our practice. Now, a lot of what I'm going to talk about is going to seem paradoxical. You know, you're saying that you come, or I'm saying that I come to practice for peace of mind. And then the teacher says that idea of peace of mind just gets in the way. The direction is to just sit. So if we have a goal, peace of mind, anxiety, stress, happiness, if we have that goal, we create that goal, we will constantly be measuring our progress to attaining that goal. I sat very well this morning, but yesterday, oh my God, it was horrible. I didn't sit well at all. You know, I sit every day, just like the teacher says, sit every day. even if it's 5 minutes. I've been doing this for a month, and everything is the same. Nothing has changed. I sit. Right? I am the one who sits. So the I is something extra, right? We always say, just sit. There's no I. There's just sitting. So there is no one who sits. So all of these different concepts, including the sense of self or I, get in the way of just sitting. They produce a myriad of thoughts which take our attention off the practice of just sitting. So this comparing and evaluating that it's very easy to slip into, one of the ways that we deal with it is not to make it an enemy, not to make it something that we push away, that we have to get rid of. In a sense, we welcome it. And as it comes in, right, we don't fight it, let it just arise. But we learn to just notice that it's a thought, it's an idea, it's a concept. The problem is when we get attached to that idea. You know, I get attached to want to be a better meditator than my teacher. Okay, right, that's this. I'm attached. What do? Just open the fist and let it go. It's natural to have thoughts. And the relationship that we have with them is most important. Right? So we say, just let it go. Notice it. And then just go back to sitting. And I'm going to get into more detail about the actual practice of sitting. But it's that attachment that is the core. Now, most people know, I don't know about the new folks, but there is a well-known Zen master who was one of the first Japanese masters to come to this country. And he started the San Francisco Zen Center. And his name is Suzuki Roshi. And this is a wonderful comparison. He compared the practice to a house. And a house has a front door and it has a back door. So he says, when we practice, we open the front door and we open the back door. And as thoughts come in the front door, we just let them go through the back door. And he says, the one thing is, you don't invite the thoughts to stay for dinner. Just let them go through. So Dogen, who is a very famous Zen master, who is revered by most people that have studied Zen, and he said, to study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. So when we sit, we just sit. Holding on, not holding on to the idea, the sensations, the feelings, the thoughts of a self that is doing this, right? Because that's an illusion that's created by our mind, but also our body. All those sensations reinforce that there's somebody who's breathing, there's somebody who's feeling the foot falling asleep, or whatever it is, right? Again, that's paradoxical. And as you get in to Zen and you deeper and you sit, the truth of what I'm talking about starts to reveal itself. So we don't say in Zen we seek to attain something. What we do is we sit and we let life come to us. We don't sit to attain life. We sit to live in life, in harmony with life. So we have to let go of this idea that there's a causal relationship between zazen and enlightenment. That doesn't mean we don't know that enlightenment occurs. But from the perspective of no causal relationship, Suzuki Roshi says, enlightenment is an accident. And the sitting makes us accident prone. Now this advice to just sit isn't just about meditation. It's a description of how we can live our life. We say when we eat, just eat. When we walk, just walk. One step, one breath at a time. When we hold a baby, just hold the baby. And this is how we live our life. Fully engaged in the activity that we are doing right now. There's a poem, and now I've forgotten the name of the person who was a Zen master. And the poem is, sitting quietly, doing nothing, spring comes and the grass grows by itself. Now, there's a koan about attention. Another foundation of our practice is learning how to pay attention. And not like your fourth grade teacher said, pay attention! Right? It's not like that. It's just pay attention. Now, again, for anybody who's new, part of a practice, our practice is koan practice. And not everybody uses that as their practice, but koans are teaching stories. It's a story that's told, a story that we read, which is designed to teach us something about our lives. So I'm going to read this because I think it pertains to Zazen and the practice of Zazen. So this is about Master Ichu. And a student of his comes to him and says, please write for me something of great wisdom. And Master Ichu picks up his brush and wrote the word attention. And the student says, is that all? And Master Ichu picked up his brush again and wrote, attention, attention. The student started to become irritable. And he says to his teacher, that doesn't sound profound or subtle to me. And in response, Master Ichu wrote, attention, attention, attention. So at this point, the student is really frustrated and he demands, what does the word attention mean? And the teacher replies, attention means attention. There's nothing extra. Just attention. Just attention, right? Somebody goes like that. That captures at least for a brief moment attention. Right? There's no this, there's nobody watching. Right? So there's nobody making the sound and nobody hearing the sound. There's just the sound itself. That is attention. So I'm just going to go over briefly how to sit Zazen, sort of a little teaching about the practice. And again, for anybody new or not, if you have any questions about sitting and about doing Zazen, you're always welcome to ask me or Jeff. Now, let me just mention this because a lot of these questions come up in what we call Daisan. And that room straight ahead of me is called the Daisan room. And in the Zen tradition, if you sign up, students come to the teacher with some question about their practice, a struggle, something that's revealed itself, anything about life in relation to this practice. So anybody is welcome to come to Daisan. And this is a quick aside, but I was astonished by this. There's a lady named Nancy who sits with us a lot. She lives in Washington and Montclair, so she's not here. But she went to a week-long retreat. And I don't remember the teacher's name. I had never heard it before. And she apparently runs a tight ship. Very, very Japanese. All her students have shaved heads. They do orioki, which is a particular type of eating. It's not just hanging out and chilling. Everything is done precisely with attention. And apparently she doesn't do Daisan, which was what I was just talking about, very often. But if a student wants Daisan, they have to pay for it, which I had never heard of before. It's usually part of the relationship. So I really haven't had the time or a chance to find out more about that. So anyway, the first thing that we do is take up the way in which we sit. You know, there's a variety of ways. And again, there is no good or bad. You know, don't let the mind get into entertaining. Well, the guy that sits on the floor in full lotus is much better than the woman who has to sit in a chair. That's all extra. It's all nonsense, right? We find the place and the form that works for us. So the sitting on the floor, we start out with wanting to have our back straight, our chin slightly lower. If we go too far, it promotes sleep. So we sit with our back straight. And the other thing about sitting with our back straight, is it opens the chest and allows a more relaxed breathing to take place. So we sit with our chin just a slightly bit lower than parallel to the ground. And we sit with our tongue resting lightly on the roof of our mouth. And we don't shut our eyes. There's a lot of traditions where we shut our eyes. In Zen, we don't. We close it about three quarters of the way and focus on a spot about 4 feet away. Try it. Try it as we're doing this together. Take whatever your position is. And so, let's straighten our backs, lower our chin a bit, let your tongue rest on the top of your mouth, and then close your eyes about 3/4 of the way and pick a spot about 4 feet in front of you. Now, when we begin to sit, we usually take what's called a clearing breath. So it's like a... And that allows us to relax again our chest and our body. And it also is the beginning of bringing our attention to our breath. So the second part of sitting is, what do we do with our legs? Full lotus is, one foot goes up like this, and then the other foot winds up here. And it's a very stable sitting position. That's another thing that's important about the position. You don't want to have the tendency to fall over or start to go back or forward. So you want to find the best position to keep yourself grounded. Now I sit with one leg tucked under and the other leg like this. And when I sit, I lean forward and it lets me sit on the cushion better. Then there's the question of, what do we do with our hands? Now there's a couple of different ways. And the traditional way, which somewhere over the years I have stopped doing, but the traditional way, and it's called the cosmic mudra. It's the left hand rests over the right, and we make a circle, an oval like an egg, and that rests on top of our legs. It is not a test of suffering. So if, let's say you sit like this, you're at a retreat, or even here, you sit like this and you find that your ankle is killing you or your knee is killing you, then it's good to learn a number of these positions, because a lot of people, particularly at retreats, because there's a lot of time spent, some people will go from that position to sitting like Mary is sitting or going to a chair. So there's no rule. You do what you have to, it's sort of creative. You do it in the way in which it works for you. People get locked into that the real way to sit is sit on the floor, and that somehow sitting in a chair is secondary or it's amateurish or whatever. But that's the mind making trouble. It's also, the mind makes trouble if you think that if you spend a whole day sitting, that you have to sit on the floor because you're comparing yourself to the woman that's sitting down in the full lotus all day. That's all extra craziness, right? We find the way to sit for ourselves. And if somebody's making judgments about it, then they better see the teacher. So the next part of sitting is, where do we place our attention? So the attention is on breath, right? And this part of our body, a little bit below the belly button, is called our hara. And if you just sit and watch your breath, you'll notice that the breath comes in and the stomach expands, and the breath goes out and the stomach collapses. Now, this is a little tricky in the beginning, but we are simply watching the breath. It's almost as if we're not breathing. The breath is just happening. The breath is going in and it's going out, in and out. And we're creating a relationship with it. So when somebody begins meditation to help stay connected to the breath, we recommend that counting. And again, don't get into judging, well, I'm not as a mature meditator because the guy that went in there just before me doesn't count. That's all extra. Start where you're at. So I'm going to do this out loud. This would be done quietly. So the breath, I'm going to catch my breath first. So the breath comes in, and it goes out. And the breath comes in, and the breath goes out. Again, this is happening in silence. I'm just doing this so that you can see what I'm talking about. So in the beginning, we count our breaths. And when the breath comes in, it's one. When the breath goes out, it's two. When it comes in, it's three. When it goes out, it's four. And we count to 10, and then when we get to 10, we go back to 1. And then if we get to 10, we go back. Now, if you're new to practice, and maybe not even new to practice, it's very difficult to get the 10 without being distracted, right? So again, we don't beat ourselves up because we didn't do it. We just go back to 1. So it would be like this. See, the number is the entire breath. It's not staccato. It's not 1, 2, 3. Right? So I got to 3 and then, oh my God, I'm thinking. Okay. The day started, went off in my head. So as soon as you realize that, no judgments, you just go back to 1. And it's like practicing anything else. As you practice it, you become more and more proficient at it. And you just allow yourself to do that without a lot of scolding of yourself, just let it be. It's what all of us have done at one, when we began our practice. So the next thing is, at a certain point, and again, this is done in relation with the teacher, at some point the teacher will say, okay, what I want you to do now is just count the out-breaths. So that would be, right, the number is the whole breath. And it comes in. Right, so that's the relationship that we have. Right, so the practice is not an opportunity to beat ourselves up, to get all wrapped up in knots because we're not doing it quote unquote right. Just breathe, just count, and don't do any evaluation. Now this progresses the relationship with breathing, and at some point we stop counting altogether. And we just sit with our breath, noticing when it comes in and noticing when it comes out. And just doing that. And in the same way, when you've lost track, you just start again. So you don't go back to 1, you just go back to breathing. And then further down the road, there is a still mind and where our body is just breathing. Remember though, in the end, there is no one breathing. Right, but nobody's watching it and nobody's naming it. It's just happening. And our mind is quiet. And the other, that's called Shikantaza. And it's there's two shoots of Zen. One is Rinzai and the other is Soto. And in the Soto school, that Shikantaza is what's used. And then the other school, and some of them are mixed, is a koan. And when we take up a koan, I'm not going to get into detail about that, we sit with the essence of the koan, not necessarily the story that I told, but the heart of it, which in this case is attention. So again, as a way of ending, don't forget that the mind is a thinking machine, and we've spent a lifetime entertaining the mind and our thinking. And so the practice is, as Suzuki said, to open the front door and the back door and let the thoughts just go through. Nobody stays for dinner, though. Thank you.